play. Look at this. Look at this.
All right, we're back here for episode 5 of the Surrender Birdies podcast, and we're mixing up the format a little bit. Not really, it's the same kind of thing, but the idea going forward is we're going to mix up the co-host a little bit, and we're going to bring in more folks from the Beltway Golfer DMV golf community, guys that I've golfed with, guys that maybe I've communicated a lot with on social media, the people that I know just have some opinions and experiences and are big golfers in the area. But I want to bring in a guy that, you know, whether or not you call yourself this, I know you're a Beltway golfer, but has got one of the coolest Instagram handles around. Mr. Dominic Lee, Dom Lee, AKA at Bandon Dunes on Instagram.
Yep. Stole it from them, apparently.
Well, tell us that. I imagine you just were early on Instagram and you grabbed it. Is there any backstory there?
I don't think I was even that like early on Instagram. But when I got on Instagram, they're like, you know, choose your handle. And I was like, well, I want this to be this is definitely going to be about golf for sure. And I was just like, well, what's the coolest place I've been to so far at that point? And at that point, it was Bandon Dunes. So I just typed it in and it popped up as green. And I was just like, done. I'll take it.
It's kind of funny. So two questions. Did Bandon Dunes have an Instagram account at that point?
Honestly, I don't think so. But as soon as I started like looking in, like pretty soon after, because people were like, how the heck did you get that handle? And then when I checked pretty soon after, it was like Bandon Dunes Golf instead of just Bandon Dunes. So yeah.
Have they ever inquired or touched base with you at all about?
No, I wish they would, to be honest, so I could kind of try to finagle some kind of deal. You know, they can have the handle anytime. I just want, you know, maybe a round at every course once a year, and I'll be good.
That'd be nice. Because what are they right now? They're Bandon Dunes Golf, you said, or Bandon Dunes Resort.
Golf. Bandon Dunes Golf or Bandon Dunes Resort. Yeah. I should probably know that by heart, but I don't. But anytime I get tagged, and I do get tagged a lot on IG, I definitely tag them in the comments. And a lot of times the person will actually switch the tag after that.
That's funny. You got to imagine they've had some conversations about it in Bandon.
I'm sure. Just like it simplifies it. So why not? And other social media platforms, since they've actually grabbed Bandon Dunes. So, I mean, they, you know, it's not like they have the one name throughout the whole gamut of social media. So, yeah.
So a bunch of things we want to hit on. So we're recording this on Masters Monday. So we're definitely going to talk about the tournament, what happened yesterday and through the weekend in the 88th playing in the Masters. But you were down there last Monday. You were down on the grounds for practice round.
Yeah, a week ago right now, I was basically walking off the golf course at this point. We were kind of, you know, we had seen everything that we wanted to see, and we're trying to beat a little bit of the crowd coming out, which actually worked out nicely because getting out of the parking lot for us was like 2 minutes, so it worked out nicely.
First time down? You've been down before?
First time down, won the lottery this year. And yeah, just started kind of going down my list of contacts golf wise, and didn't have to get too far down that list to get three other yeses. And yeah, me and some buddies just went.
I love it. I mean, everyone's got kind of the same story of how many times they've put their names into the lottery. I've read some things that they do some, like, it's not like totally 100% random, like they'll do, or maybe it is the first time they pull up, but they do some checks into it to I don't know how much this is true. This is something I read several years ago, but like they double check to see the likelihood that this person might resell it, like based on like their internet profile, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much is that true. I probably mistakenly over the years have changed the email that I use, which I feel like is maybe hurting my chances. I don't know if that's true. I don't know.
Again,
but I'm saying I haven't won yet.
Right. I've like talked to so many guys in the last few months about it. And yeah, some guys have been waiting for 15 years, you know, since the lottery started. And some people like got it pretty soon after joining the lottery. So I guess it is truly a lottery.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at is I've never been to the Masters. I've never been to Augusta National. Obviously bucket list. I actually thought this year was, I was a little bit bummed, like, when Thursday rolled around And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love everything about the Masters, loved watching it. But it was like when it first hit, or maybe it was even early in the week, there was just like 1 minute of like, or maybe an hour of a little bit of melancholy. Cause I like, if I rewound like 11 months, I mean, I kind of do this every year, but it was like, next year, I'm looking at the calendar. Oh, this is going to work out. Like next year is my year. Like maybe I'll go down and I'll just scalp a ticket, but I think I can pull it off. And then like the week came and I'm like, I didn't do it. I didn't do it again. Like still haven't gone. But anyway, to walk us through your months. So you get three, you went down with three guys. Walk us through, like, when did you go down? Like give us the whole deal.
Yeah. So, I wanted to, like, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was like, when I got the tickets, I knew it was a Monday. I figured I would miss, class, you know, Monday and Tuesday. So I wanted to make like a weekend trip out of it. So the way that we did it was they picked me up right after school on Friday, drove down to Asheboro, North Carolina, stayed there for two nights. And then we switched over to Columbia, South Carolina, and stayed there for the other two nights. So Saturday we played Asheboro Country Club, which is like a pretty like cheap, but awesome golf course. It's, I think it was, we paid a 9-hole fee, and the guy, and we were walking too, cause we're like all walkers. And the guy had to actually check to see what the walking rate was for 9 holes. Cause he just never sees that ever at that course. So he had to like leave the room and like come back with the actual proper fee. But, I guess I can admit this now. We ended up playing 12 holes accidentally. So we like played the first three, which was like in front of the property. And then we got to the back and no one was there. And so we were just like, let's just play the back nine. Cause the back nine had like a cool, it looked like a cool routing. So we ended up playing the back nine, and then, which is a beautiful piece of property for sure. But after we finished, on 18, we went back in, threw the guy a big tip, and he was super stoked about that. So we felt good about it, and then and then left. But yeah, our afternoon tea time was at Tot Hill Farm. Nice course.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So
just reopened this past year after the renovation.
Just got redone in the last couple of years. That was awesome. Have you played a lot of Strands courses?
The only ones I've played are Royal New Kent, Tobacco, and Stonehouse. So the only three.
Oh, nice. Okay. Stonehouse, I think I'm checking off my list this summer. But yeah, I've only played Royal New Kent and Tobacco, and I might put Tot Hill at the top of my list of the Strands courses. Yeah, it's really, really good. The middle of the back nine is, it's like magic. I mean, I absolutely love the middle of the back nine. Front nine had a lot of like classic Strands courses where like giant mounding blocking all view of the fairway. You have no idea where the hole goes unless you had like, you know, GPS or whatever else. Crazy uphill and downhill, giant collection areas, all that other stuff. And it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. But the middle of the back nine kind of goes around a certain water feature, and it's just unreal. The light was starting to get a little bit low at that point, so it just looked awesome. And we finished, you know, like 30 minutes before probably the sun went down completely. So like the last hole was kind of tough to see, but yeah, it was good.
Do you know, I don't know the answer to this. Is there management of whoever owns or manages Tot Hill? Are they affiliated with Tobacco at all, or they're totally separate management?
I actually don't know. We talked to a pro in the shop. It didn't seem like they were like closely affiliated. They have like basically the same logo though. So I don't know if there is some affiliation there, but yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know. The only reason I asked, I actually went down and played Tobacco this past spring. It was the second time I've played it and still love the course, but on second playing, for what they were charging and some of the like amenities around it. And like, I didn't like it as much. The experience was not as impressive the second time as the first time, but I think they're under new management as well, I think.
Yeah. That's kind of the vibe that I've heard from down there. Some of my buddies went to Pinehurst, this last, February, and the plan is generally go to Pinehurst, play, you know, mid pines, Southern pines, pine needles, first 2 days, go to Pinehurst itself, play 2-4, and then play Tobacco on the way back up. But yeah, I think they're charging like at the end of February, like 250, and all the guys were just like, yeah, that's not worth it in February when you're rolling the dice with the weather. So yeah. I don't know. They're charging a lot down there, and I mean, I don't know. I'm rarely going to pay that much money to play any course, let alone
Right on.
I mean, Tobacco's special for sure, but not sure. February.
They've got terrible food and they had some nasty bathrooms, at least when we were there. And I was like, man, for the money you're paying, I'm like, man, come on, just do a little bit.
Right. You gotta upgrade. Right. I'll say that Tot Hill redid their clubhouse too, from what I heard. And they did a really good job. It's a really cool vibe in the clubhouse now.
Nice. I'll got to get down there soon. Okay. So you played Tot Hill Sunday. Is that what you said?
Saturday. So that was still Saturday. Okay. Sunday morning, we drove down to Aiken and got to play Aiken Golf Club.
Oh, wow.
Which was awesome.
I've never played it, but I mean, I feel like I know the course from as many pictures and kind of videos I've seen of it. But they have some special. I thought it was pretty hard to get on during Masters Week, is it not? And they jacked up a little bit.
Yes, exactly. So I think the normal greens fees were right around like $50-$55 for public play, but during Masters Week, I think we ended up paying like $135 or $140 each. And yeah, you have to kind of like sign up. It's really not, but you have to sign up to, you know, get a foursome available there and all that other stuff. So one of my buddies really wanted to play, put our names on the list, got a, you know, early afternoon tea time there. So we ended up playing that. Absolutely worth every penny that we paid. I can't imagine being like a member there and paying, you know, like around $2,000 a year, being able to play that course every weekend. That place was awesome.
How far is Aiken from Augusta?
Aiken is, we went back and forth from Columbia. So I think Aiken is only about like 20 or 30 minutes from Augusta. But Columbia was only an hour away. So we did that drive a couple times. I didn't realize how far or how close Augusta was to the South Carolina border. So yeah, we stayed in Columbia, South Carolina, and then drove down each day or drove down in the morning to Augusta, and then drove back that night.
So what time are you waking up and walking on property on Monday morning? What time are the gates open?
Right. So this was, we didn't do like a ton of research, but we read a few articles. We saw what was printed on the actual ticket itself and all that other stuff. So they were saying on the ticket, like, you know, gates open at 8, parking opens at 7. But then there were some websites saying that gates actually kind of open at 7 to like kind of get in the merchandise area. And then the course opens at 8 rather than the actual, you know, gate itself. So I think we ran a little bit late and we got on property at 6:50 a.m. and it was packed. I mean, cars were everywhere. Traffic getting in was awful. And we saw like thousands of people in line and we were just like, oh my Lord. Like they had like spotlights, you know, cause it was still dark out. They had like spotlights to like light everything up just to make sure that people knew where they were going. There were hundreds of people like making sure cars were parked in the right spot, like getting you like as close as possible to each other in each lane, directing you to the end of the line, all that stuff. One of the miraculous things that day was that we had one buddy who lived in Georgia, who lived in Atlanta and was meeting us there. And we're trying to get there kind of at the same time to try to find each other at the beginning. And, you know, you have to leave your phone in the car. So we're both like, we're here, we're walking towards the line, but like this line is just like extending more and more. Throw our phones in the car. Well, except one buddy. I'll tell you that story in a second. And got in line and we were just on opposite sides of the parking lot and we just happened to like literally get in line at the exact same time. So I didn't have to like, you know, wait around and try to find him or whatever else. So it worked out.
I love anecdotes like that. And you just start wondering, you know, you go back to the, you know, what did we do before cell phones, you know, 10 a.m. Exactly. on the big tree, by the big tree on the third
by the
hole.
Big
third
tree. Fairway. Yeah, exactly. That was the other thing that we talked about. Like, meeting areas there, like the big tree, the main leaderboard, you know, like places that you should gather that are pretty easy to spot someone from.
Right. So when you got in, you guys go straight to the merch tent or what?
Yeah. So we, you know, that was what everyone said. And all the anecdotal like stories that we heard before were definitely wrong about the merch tent. Like, we were obviously like, you know, maybe thousands of people back, but we like got in that merch tent line and like saw like, you know, another thousands of people like, you know, passing us to get into the actual property. But we waited for almost an hour and a half in that merch line, like just to get into the merchandise tent. Like, it was a crazy, crazy, crazy long line, and it was madness in the merch tent. And I've heard from other people who went on a Monday in years past being like, yeah, we like got on property, short line to the merch tent, so we just kind of hopped in and then did all that. But not this year. It was madness.
I don't understand. I mean, I guess they have certain things, from what I understand, that they replenish each day, so that if you go later in the day, they'll sell out of certain things. But yeah, the idea of carrying around your stuff all day is just not.
Yeah. So they have actually several options. So every ticket, you get two entries onto property. So a lot of guys will actually run back to the car and then throw their merch there and then come back on property. The second option is to check it in, which none of us did. And the third option, which all three of us did, was to ship it. So as soon as you leave the merchandise area, you just turn left and there are two lines, one for the check-in, one for the shipping. And we all shipped our stuff. Actually, in the shipping line, I was standing next to Harry Diamond, Rory's caddy. Okay. And yeah, no one recognized him. And he was standing right behind me, and I was just like standing in line, and I was looking around. I look at the guy behind me, and I was just like, and I looked at him, and I think he kind of knew that I knew. And so I just asked him, I was like, I didn't want to say like, you know, are you like Rory McIlroy's caddy in the middle of this line? I just was like, I feel like I recognize you. Do you caddy? And that's all I said. And he was like, yep. And so, you know, we just started talking for a few minutes there.
That's funny. As feeling like hundreds of rounds I've watched Rory McIlroy play, I'm not sure I know what his caddy looks like. I'm not sure I would have recognized him. I'm pulling him right now. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would in the middle of a merch tent if I would be able to pull that. I'm not sure. I'm looking at him now. Yes, he looks familiar. Yes, okay, I know who he is, but I don't know if I'd probably be one of those people walk right by him.
Exactly. Like, we were snaking back and forth, and only one person I think recognized him too and just said good luck to him, and that was it. Like, everyone else completely just didn't even care. But yeah, really, really nice guy. You know, people have their opinions about Rory's caddy and all that stuff, but just talking to him for a few minutes, really, really nice guy. I was impressed with him.
That's cool. Well, so what was kind of your plan for the day? Any big, you follow any specific golfers? Like, what'd you do out there?
Yeah. So our plan was basically hit the merch tent, ship our stuff, and then just start walking the course. We did it the way that, I guess Andy Johnson has suggested to do it, which is, you know, walk the course backwards.
Yeah.
So we started at 18 green, just kind of, oh, well, first off, we went to 9 green because Tiger was there by the time we got on property. So, you know, we had to see that. We watched him kind of putt around and stuff like that. He only played 9 holes that day. And so we wanted to watch him, you know, for as well as we could from like way back in the crowd.
On Monday, was he walking? On Monday, was he walking as gingerly as he was on Thursday and Friday and even later?
We were like 10 to 15 deep, so we could barely kind of see his gait. We like saw like his upper torso basically the entire time, so I couldn't tell. But, you know, he has such a presence that everyone was just sitting there to watch him. But yeah, so we saw him putt for a little bit on 9 green, and then he left. And then, yeah, we walked the back 9 backwards. We stayed for a very long time in aiming corner, saw people skipping water on on 16, like saw all that stuff. So we spent a lot of time on the back 9 for sure.
When did you leave the course? Like how long did you stay?
So we, you know, 6 o'clock is when they would start kicking people off. We were at 11 green and 12 tee, kind of in that area. By the time it was like 5:30, and we just saw like dozens of security people just start filtering out, not telling anyone to move yet. Like a lot of them were like sitting down or like gathering in certain spots, but we knew that like pretty soon they're going to start telling everyone to move off the course. So yeah, we just slowly started making our way back at 5, probably like 5:30, a little after 5:30, and we're off property by 5:45.
Nice.
It's crazy how like close everything is to each other at Augusta. I was really impressed, I didn't know that. Like I'd never really seen like an overall course map, so I didn't know like how close the holes were and stuff like that to each other. So going from there back to the North parking lot was pretty quick.
Yeah. And you've only really started to notice that on TV in the last year or two once they've started adding these drone shots.
Exactly.
Even on 18, where like 9 green comes up right next to it. Now that they have a drone, You can see, 9 green's right there behind like those 8 deep or 10, whatever it is, 15 deep. But yeah, it's crazy close to each other.
The cool thing that they did with I think it was a computerized image, but they kind of showed 9 and 18 without the grandstands and patrons. And you realize how like kind of in the middle of that hill they are, and there's like nothing around it, you know, like it's all like clear and open. And so it'd be interesting to play it like not during the event where it is just like a small green, like kind of in the middle of nowhere. I will say that the small greens are like, that's the one thing I haven't heard a lot of people talk about, but I noticed pretty quickly, like 10 green is the smallest little like, you know, downhill or front to back kind of slope green that I've seen in a long time. And if you're hitting that like downhill shot to that little tiny green, I mean, it looks intimidating as all get out.
So going to Augusta for the first time in person, I mean, I know you're a golf junkie. We've played golf together. We've chatted. I know you're a bit of a golf design junkie as well. Did it change at all? Did it change at all the way you watch the actual tournament?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like there are certain holes that you see, like, you know, on TV. It was interesting because like I was actually looking at it more from like an amateur's point of view and someone who like wouldn't be able to fly the ball in the air 220 yards on a string and not worry about consequences. So I was thinking a lot about like kind of the ground game, like going towards some of the greens, and you get to see a lot of like mounding and runoff areas and slopes away from the green. And you kind of understand why everyone hits it to certain spots on certain holes. Like they just kind of do that as pros anyways, because they can put the ball almost anywhere they want to. And you could really see clearly why every pro would miss a certain green in a certain area, and because the other side is just like absolutely dead, or like how open it is on a second shot of a par five, where like, you know, that's why pros are missing like 50 yards, you know, wide right, stuff like that.
Right. So
all that stuff was cool to see in person.
Food? Any food takeaways? Everyone always wants to talk about the food, and you know.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Food takeaways. Yeah. I did not. Okay. So I'm lactose intolerant. So I didn't have the pimento cheese sandwich. Okay. I had lactate pills with me, but I didn't want to like risk it on that kind of day. So no pimento cheese for me, but egg salad was awesome. Egg salad was right on point. This is kind of a hot take. The peach ice cream didn't do it for me.
Have you had peach ice cream? Is it peach ice cream you don't like, or is it what Masters is putting out?
I don't know. This probably will get me kicked off of any future lottery. But the peach ice cream was okay. It just wasn't kind of as special as some people have described it. Barbecue pork was awesome though, you know? Okay. And the prices were absolutely amazing for everything. Merch tent too. I will say the merch tent as well. Nothing was overpriced at all that I saw. There was like a special collection in the back. So on like a wing of a merch tent, you like have to go up some stairs, and that's like the really fancy stuff. So that I'm sure stuff was more expensive there. But yeah, everything else was pretty affordable there.
So doing it the way you did it, which is the old school way of waiting until you win the lottery, or your buddies waiting until your friend wins the lottery. because practice round tickets are only, what are they, 50 or 100 bucks or something once you win?
100 bucks, yep.
100 bucks. So only 100 bucks to go to the practice round, you know, the cheap food that everybody always talks about and the relatively inexpensive merch. You're not spending a ton of money. Airbnb, did you spend a bunch?
Yeah, okay, so like the hotels weren't that expensive. We stayed at not the greatest place in Colombia. I don't think I want to put that hotel on blast or anything, but if anyone else to DM me, that's a place to avoid. The trains going through and blowing their horns at night. The first night it was 10:30, 3 o'clock, and 5:30 a.m. that I heard. Falling in and out of sleep. So it was a rough stay there. But yeah, I mean, everything is pretty affordable. Like, I know one of my buddies also went on a Monday with his friends. He was like a last second invite. They had like a house down there, and I know he spent a good amount of money just for that one night if you're staying like pretty close to Augusta. But we were an hour away, and it was, you know, I think they surge priced it a little bit, but it wasn't too bad. It was like 165 a night ish, maybe a little bit more.
So here's my next question for you. So earlier on, you mentioned, you know, I think you said you had to take off school or school's out, but you didn't clarify that you're a school teacher.
Teacher
to private school.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, working on a school teacher's salary, you know, if you don't win the lottery to an event round, what's your number? Here's my question for you. What's your number for a Thursday through a Thursday through an actual tournament round? Because the prices are getting crazy on the secondary market.
Right. My personal number might be like 500 bucks. Again, that's a lot. That's a big chunk of change. What the funny thing is, when you're like talking about how everything is affordable, I mean, I spent a lot of money at the merch tent for sure. We don't have to talk about that number exactly, but I will say that at least 80% of that stuff that I bought is for other people. So sure. I'm not giving my buddies Christmas gifts this year. They're just getting master's gifts, and then I'm kind of done with that. But yeah, so you could drop a lot of money in the merch tent pretty quickly. While we're waiting in line, some other guys were talking down the line, and they talked about how they knew someone who dropped 82 grand in one trip to the merch tent. And my mind just like did not comprehend what you would do. Like how could you spend that much money? I don't know. But like the secondary market is absolutely littered with Masters merchandise. So they're just people buying 50 hats and, you know, splitting.
Are there items in there that are four figures? Like, is there stuff over $1,000 in there? What are they selling?
So that's the thing. I think there's that one little wing. They have like a glass cabinet where they have like, you know, a friend of mine got cufflinks. So my buddy from Georgia got cufflinks. And I think that was the majority of the amount that he spent. But there's like, you know, thousands of dollar watches. There's like a giant like leather bag that was pretty sweet, but I would never get, you know, like a weekender bag. The most expensive thing I heard of was the Bettinardi putter. I think they only sell, you know, like maybe like 10 to 20 of those a day. But yeah, we saw two people with boxes of the Bettinardi putter.
What was that going for? Do you remember?
I don't know. We never got a chance because by the time we were in there, it was gone already. So my guess would be a couple $1,000 though.
Interesting. Did you spend any time? I'm always also fascinated because all you see on camera is, you know, inside the grounds, inside the fences of Augusta National, but right outside, I forget the name of the road right there outside Augusta National, but it seems like, you know, I grew up in Montgomery County. It looks like Rockville Pike, or Leesburg Pike or something where it just, you know, it's, it, there's, you know, you got it's the Hooters down the street and.
Right. The Hooters down the street for sure. It's kind of like, well, it was odd because we saw it, you know, at 6 a.m. driving in. So we didn't see a lot, of, you know, we didn't see it at its peak. And the afternoon, we were just trying to get out of there as fast as possible. And that entire road was a parking lot. So it's a pretty like, it's not a very special road, let's just say. Like, it's not, you know, it would be like the older part of Rockville Pike, you know, where it hasn't been, you know, redeveloped and all that stuff. So it was just a the main road in a town, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't have that feel like where you're at Pinehurst, for example, where like even just like right outside of the Pinehurst Resort, the little town there, it's still really feels nice. Like
yeah.
a town that almost feels like it's a part of the resort. And a lot of it is, but like, you know, you stretch out and it still feels very Pinehursty.
Exactly. Well, I feel like that's kind of the difference between a golf course with 300 members. I would assume 99% don't live in that area, right? So
the rest of the community could probably give a shit.
I mean, I hate to say it, but yes, I mean, you know, the Masters brings in a ton of money that one week, and it is a ton of money, right? So, but Pinehurst, you have 10 courses, you have another 10 right near there where all that money is being spent and people would want to live in. And so that's why Pinehurst, you know, house prices are so much, and Augusta might be a little bit different. But at Augusta, you know, you might be affording that one week to kind of help your livelihood out quite a lot. I mean, I know at Aiken, like, you know, going between $50, $30-some, you know, around. And also I heard that they don't allow members to play that week as well, just to make sure that all that money is coming into the club to help out the club, you know? So that's the difference right there.
All right. Well, what about, let's move on to the actual tournament itself. This is Masters Monday.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler ends up winning by four. And what's leading up to, what's interesting, they all, you know, I think a lot of people's take is, you know, the Masters doesn't start till back nine on Sunday. And this, this tournament was, you know, leading like up until the back nine on Sunday was like one of the most exciting Masters. It was like almost the exact flip flop.
Yeah, exactly. It was so exciting to watch like that first half of Sunday. And, you know, what was it? Everyone was tied on hole eight. Like, it was just super exciting. But once Scheffler started like actually hitting golf shots, like I think he talked about it, how like it was a little bit of a struggle at the beginning, and he finally hit that one good shot, and that kind of like turned in his head like, oh, I can execute from here on out. So like, as soon as he started like kind of running away from the field, it got kind of boring, to be honest. Like, it was just like one of those things where just like you're hoping, the back of your head, you're kind of like hoping there's a mistake so it becomes exciting, or someone like goes on some crazy run that has happened before. But neither of those things happen. You know, Hebert and Morikawa hitting it into the water on 11, or Homa putting it into the azalea bushes behind 12. Like, it's just, you know, it became a little bit, you kind of knew the result, let's just say.
Yeah. I saw somebody running down, maybe it was one of the fried egg guys this morning, was running down how the last really seven Masters, you know, it hasn't really been, I think he said last seven Masters, at the very minimum, the leader could play for bogey on 18 and win. Like, it didn't need Scotty, a par.
What, Scotty four putted 2 years ago on 18?
Right. And Rahm won by three or four. And, you know, at least Tiger was, you know, had a 2-stroke lead going into 18. I think Matsuyama the same. There was a bunch that goes back quite a ways. But Friday, you know, Friday and Saturday with the wind was riveting television. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, the wind on Friday especially was crazy to watch, but also a lot of fun. We got to play in that on Saturday. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you played on Saturday, but it was tough.
I did not. I was coaching baseball on Saturday in the wind, but I was not
playing. Gotcha.
I did post. Gotcha. I will say, if anyone listening, I posted something on my Instagram stories, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, because one of the kids baseball teams I coach, we were scheduled to have our first games, and it was ending at 6:45 yesterday on Sunday. And I was like, once I realized, I was like, oh my God, I missed the match. But I got that move, so I was able to get home, watch the back nine yesterday.
Okay, good.
But again, as soon as I hit, you know, Scheffler started to pull away as soon as I got to sit down.
Are you one of the guys who like, Are you one of the guys who tries to catch up once you sit down, or do you just watch live and you just want to be into it?
No, I really can't do that. I've tried to do that over the year. I haven't done that in any sporting event, trying to catch up. I have some buddies that absolutely do that, turn off their phones, whether it's golf or other sports, or maybe the next morning, right, whether it's a late basketball game. I can't do it. I'm too addicted to my phone. I want to know what happened. Like, if I missed it, I missed it. And I at least know the result. Sometimes I'll watch afterwards, but no, I caught up. But let me go through a couple guys and get your quick take. So Morikawa, what'd you think about Morikawa?
I think his post round interview was kind of on. I mean, he's such a good interview. I think his post round interview though was kind of on point. He was just like, "That's what happens when you're playing really well and you get greedy." You know, like some of the shots that he hit were just like, "You just can't do that at that time." I mean, his shot on 11 was kind of shocking because like it was, you know, it was a big draw, like to the left of the green, and that's what causes double bogey. But like, yeah, that's what he said. He just got really, really greedy with some of the lines he was taking off the tee, and he just ended up in jail. I mean, him going backwards, back to the members tee on 18 was kind of crazy in terms of punching out, and he still made bogey, of course.
That was a crazy bogey.
That was impressive. I mean, that's a very classic, you know, like bogey that, you know, you or I or one of our buddies would make for sure. But like, yeah, just like he just, I really wouldn't say he choked. He was just saying, you know, missing his spots by a little bit. I mean, I felt like Homa did the same thing on Saturday. You know, he was just missing his spots by a couple yards here and there and had long birdie putts all day. And then yesterday, Homa on 12 missed his spot by, what, 3 yards, 2 or 3 yards, and that ended up behind the green.
Yeah. That bogey for Morikawa on 18, I do have to shout out. I was in a small pool, Masters pool. It was one of these ones, I think there was only like 20 to 25 guys in it, but it was one of these ones. Okay. It was like six tiers of players, and you choose one player from each tier. And the Morikawa bogey on 18 secured my win by one stroke. So that won me a few $100. That was fun.
Well done. Well done. Good choosing there. You're praying that he would lose his ball to the right.
I didn't have all the math, so I found that out after the fact. So it wasn't necessarily a check, but it was still pretty cool. Who we mentioned him briefly, but Ludvig Åberg.
Åberg. Yeah.
How are you pronounced?
Super. Right. So we've talked about this before. I don't watch a ton of PGA golf. I watch kind of the majors, players, and Riviera, right? So those are kind of the only tournaments that I really pay attention to. But that dude was super impressive all day long. I mean, what was it on like 8 or 9 when he's like fist bumping people, lost his protein bar, and all he did was like kind of stop and like sheepishly smile at the person and then kind of carry on. I mean, he was like joking with his caddy in the middle of the fairway, like when they're like down the stretch on the back nine. I was super, super impressed with him, and I would put him on any kind of betting pool I would have from here on out, because he looks like a dude who could do anything he wants at the Masters. He's
no
got
doubt.
A lot of the shots. Yeah, I'm impressed.
He's a beast. He seems like a guy who's going to get a couple majors quick, but he also seems like a guy. He's so young and so good that he's got, it's obvious he's got like zero scar tissue. You know,
right. Of course. Yeah. A lot, you know, like there have been a lot of people anointed. I mean, you know, right. Like, everyone's anointed Scotty already, and he's won, you know, two majors, and so we'll see what happens from here. But I mean, like, again,
Scotty's been around long enough and has missed enough 3 foot putts that he's got plenty of scar tissue.
True. Scotty's a little bit different. Yeah, like you know, like people anointed so many people over the years, and it takes a lot of luck and a ton of skill and a lot of you know, just a lot of fortitude to be really good at this game for that long. But
yeah,
Åberg is really, really impressed. Yeah.
All right, two more guys. Bryson.
All right, I'll be perfectly honest. Bryson was the only person I was rooting against on Sunday. I just that's just me. Even though he's a quote unquote physics guy and he knows all the physics about golf, I don't know. There's something about him I'm not a huge fan of, but he showed a ton of class. I will say, like, he seems like he's matured a lot since the last time. I feel like we've kind of seen him really on the scene, but yeah, just showed a lot of class. So made me a bigger fan of him after this week.
I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I'm not really a fan of him. He did seem like a lot of like golf Twitter and a lot of like the younger golf media who loves to really justifiably hate on Bryson DeChambeau seemed to do a 180 on him in this tournament. They're like, oh, we missed Bryson. Yeah. Right. This guy's the content king, all this kind of stuff. I think if he was around a little bit longer, they'd remember why they disliked him in the first place. But yeah.
Right. But like his hole out on 18 on Saturday was absolutely special. But yeah, like he showed more class than I was kind of expecting. He did like carry the signpost, you know, like to take it out of his out of the way. Like all that stuff was kind of silly stuff, but yeah, he's better on my list than before, but not nearly near the top. So yeah.
I didn't dig into the whole what is it, bulge, and how do you describe his irons, like his 3D printed irons?
What
was it, bulge and flip or something? I forget.
No idea. But I don't know how we got that approved either through the USGA. So we'll see what happens with that in the future.
Right. At least they only approved it on a Monday, right? All right. Last guy, Tiger Woods.
Ooh. So I didn't watch a ton of Saturday. I had my own golf event happening on Saturday and then saw family and stuff like that. So I didn't watch a lot of Saturday, but the little bit of Sunday that I saw, I mean –
Did you watch much? Well, let me ask you this. Did you watch him? I didn't watch much on Saturday either, but Friday I watched a ton. Did you watch him Thursday or Friday?
So, yeah. So I saw his round or a lot of his shots from Friday, and it was super impressive. I mean, just someone who knows the course so intimately. And then I think just Saturday and Sunday, I mean, you were talking about him walking gingerly earlier. I mean, I don't think his body could, you know, move the way it was moving on Thursday and Friday. And his scores kind of showed what happens at Augusta National when that happens. So, I mean, when you're off by a little bit, it punishes you. And if you're off by a lot, I mean, it's just impossible to score there.
I thought Friday was one of the most insane. And I'm not like a crazy, crazy, like over the top Tiger fan. But I thought Friday's round was like one of the most impressive things I'd ever seen. From him. I mean, it was like the conditions were absolutely nuts. You're seeing A-list players, like multi-major winners, just totally fall off, miss the cut.
Crumble.
He's
sure.
Walking like a 75-year-old man, you know, just taking baby steps, conserving like every little thing. And he's just making par.
Yeah,
it was
impressive.
It was crazy. You just expected him to drop a triple or – pull a drive into the woods and just never happened, at least Saturday. I thought it was a fun Masters, you know, maybe not the most exciting at 6 o'clock on Sunday, but overall, right. I thought it was still a pretty awesome tournament.
Absolutely had fun. Yeah, it was amazing. and obviously watching it with the perspective that I had this year made it extra special for sure.
All right. Well, you know, a couple more topics to hit on non-Masters. Yeah. You know, while we got you. One, you touched on you were playing at one of your own events on Saturday. Was this at Worthington Manor?
Yeah, it was at Worthington Manor. It was a Hive event, so I'm in a golf group called the Hive.
So you're gonna hit on two topics I wanted to bring up: Worthington Manor and the Hive. Go ahead.
Oh, there you go. So Worthington Manor in the windiest conditions that might have been the windiest day I've ever played in this area. So in terms of Beltway golf, like that was the craziest wind I've seen. The greens, they had just, you know, aerated and verticut and sanded. So that honestly helped the ball stop. Cause you know, the slopes at Worthington, I mean, the greens are crazy at Worthington. So that helped the ball stop for sure. But yeah, it was a Hive event. We kind of call it the Vinvitational because Vinay, one of my buddies, kind of like sets the list and sets the groups and kind of, you know, it's his event. We had 24 guys show up, which is pretty impressive. We play early on Saturday and then you know, try to go home and watch the Masters. So yeah, that's what we did Saturday.
I want to hear what you tell people just kind of about the Hive, but first I want, if you're open to it, I want you to tell people about the deal you got from Worthington Manor, however many years ago it was now. Was it 5 years ago? Are you still part of this deal?
So it was almost 7 years ago. So what I did was, so they had a membership drive to help get money to redo, I think it was a clubhouse at the time. So what they did was, it's 5 years. You had to pay $7,500 up front. That was definitely a conversation with my wife about me spending a lot of our savings on golf, and it going away. But I'm very, very glad we did it. 2 years into the deal, they did it again for, I think it was $8,500 at the time for 5 years. And so I just kind of, I talked to Bob, the owner, and I tacked on 2 years at the end. So that's actually coming up, I think at the end of this year, if not a little bit further into 2025. So I'm almost done.
So you basically got 7 years at $1,500 a year paid up front.
Essentially.
And that got you what? Golf 7 days a week?
Golf 7 days a week, locker, free carts if I, you know, I rarely walk that course, but free carts if I wanted it. Yeah, I don't have to pay a single thing for anything golf related at all, playing, practicing, et cetera.
It's pretty phenomenal. I mean, obviously there's, you know, people do breakdowns and country clubs and stuff like that, but especially for a public golfer, $1,500 bucks a year. What ballpark, how many rounds you're playing a year at Worthington Manor over this period?
Definitely around 80 some. So yeah, I think last year it was like 89. Some years it goes up, some years it's a little bit down. But last year was kind of, I guess, maybe in the middle or lower end of it. So yeah.
First of all, that's impressive. That's a good amount of golf. But second of all, I mean, that you know, quick back of the napkin math, that comes out to like less than $20 a round, which is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I will say I have the most patient wife ever. She is amazing for one, letting me dip into our savings to pay for golf up front, and then two, obviously letting me play golf a lot of weekends. Summer's
and well, I was just saying a teacher's schedule with summers off, I imagine, helps.
Exactly. As I tell anybody who's jealous of me over the summer, you're very, very welcome to join me in the classroom. You know, teachers, good teachers especially, are much needed in pretty much every subject. So, you know, complain to me those 2 months, but I would happily, you know, have you join the teaching ranks and join me.
And I imagine you're one of the lower handicapped teachers in the DC area. If you're going to do one of those, Golf Digest puts out this poll, like the best golfers on Capitol Hill. If they did like a best golfers in education, you know, where does Dominic Lee rank?
For sure. Definitely. I can say I'm the best golfer at my school for sure. I've met some other teachers who are pretty darn good, especially in the, you know, the VSGA circuit that I kind of run in, especially over the summer. You know, the VSGA 1 day events are absolutely amazing. They're during the week, but they're extremely affordable. They're, I think, $60 a round, this year, or $60 or $65 a round this year. But like, you get to play a lot of country clubs, you know, on a Monday or Tuesday. Some of the higher end public courses will host us. They do a lot of like 2 day trips to like, you know, Kingsmill or some other courses. So like that's pretty affordable. And I've met a few teachers over there and they're pretty good too. So yeah,
I'm going to dip back into the VSGA 1 day events. I think we talked about this at Worthington Manor last year. I did one several years ago and I think I just had one bad experience of like a brutally slow round, but the events they put on, the price is right.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be a 5 hour round because it's a shotgun start and it's a ton of people, you know, like they usually have a full field of 120. And when you got 120 golfers, unless you have 18 marshals, it's going to be a slow round. They have like, you know, they have a stroke limit now that's come on since I started doing that.
That helps.
But it helps a little bit, but you know, there's always going to be slow play.
So tell us a little bit about the Hive. I love hearing about other people's kind of golf groups.
Yeah, so I could talk for a long time about the Hive. The Hive is It's a group of golfers who, I'm going to be bad at about this because I'm not like a recent member, but I'm a relatively recent member. So the Hive is a group of golfers who actually, I think, started chatting on the Golf WRX forums, and they just wanted to kind of like find guys to play with, find guys who wanted to compete, who knew golf rules, who knew, you know, who wanted to like kind of be somewhat serious about it. And they started slowly kind of, you know, forming a group out of that. When I joined, there were like maybe 20 members of it, you know? And so they just had events from March all the way through October, you know, or actually through November, you know, once a month. They had a lot of different formats, you know, like sometimes it'd be four ball, sometimes it would be shamble, sometimes you play the red tees. Sometimes, you know, you'd play a lot of different events, self better ball. So every May we go to Whiskey Creek on a Wednesday and we play a self better ball. So like you play 18, play another 18, and then you just take your better ball, from both rounds, and then you score that way, you know? Yeah. So November is our scramble because it's cold and, you know, all that other stuff. But you know, the Hive is actually, it hasn't shrank too much in size, but the events have definitely lessened. Like there are a lot fewer events now than there have been in the past. You know, again, we used to play almost every month, but it's like so many of our guys are getting older, join clubs, have families, all that other stuff. So the dynamic in the Hive has actually changed quite a lot since I joined / became a board member. And so, you know, my buddy Vinay does the Master Saturday every year. We usually do a better ball round in March. And we're trying to figure out what kind of would fit into people's schedules, because we got up to like 51 members and like 10 or 12 were showing up to some of the events. And that's just not a sustainable thing. So Master Saturday is always popular. So there's 24 guys who showed up to that, but we're trying to like kind of pick and choose. May's self-better ball is usually popular, so we'll keep that around. But I think the summer events are the ones kind of being thrown to the wayside.
Is this a primarily Maryland group or all over the area? Or?
It's Maryland, Virginia, DC, you know, me being from DC. So Maryland, Virginia, DC, you know, there are guys who have moved to, you know, Pennsylvania or Atlanta or whatever else, and they'll pop in when they can. But yeah, like the summer is usually the hardest ones nowadays to kind of get, one, get good tee times, and two, get all of our guys together. Because we used to do a solstice event where you just, you know, 54 holes where you had tee times, and then you would just try to play as much as you can after that. That used to go great. But now since COVID, I mean, you just can't get tee times like that anymore.
So let me ask you this. So as someone like yourself who plays an awful lot of golf, especially at Worthington Manor, I imagine you play at a lot of events at Worthington Manor, their own kind of club events and that sort of thing. You know, what does... Actually,
there's not a lot of club events at Worthington. We don't have a club championship, heard of. But a lot of our events are there. You know, the Hive plays there a lot. And you know, we just get, sometimes we'll get like 16 guys out there and we'll just kind of have like a funky format.
Well, that then I guess answers the question I was about to ask, which is, you know, what is it about the Hive specifically, or even just being also a part of a group like that, that kind of scratches the itch that you can't get otherwise, whether it's through Worthington Manor or like state association stuff or like anything else that's going on out there.
Right. So the Hive is like, you know, like the state association stuff is like all like very official and very like the format is basically stroke play. Right. So that's all you're doing. You know, maybe you sign up for a couple better balls here and there. But the Hive was designed to like, again, mix up those formats. So, you know, like we played University of Maryland and played the red tees and had one of our guys who's really good shoot like a 58, you know, like no one does that kind of stuff. You know, that kind of thing was kind of fun and unique about the Hive. But again, it's just, you know, guys' priorities have changed. And so like, they're just like, I don't want to pay $100 to play the red tees at a course. So we had to like start slowly changing the formatting and stuff like that. But these days, I feel like the main thing about the Hive is like we just have a Discord channel. And so like we just kind of use it to like keep in contact with each other, talk about live sports, where everyone was chatting about the Masters that entire time yesterday. And, we'll like, we have a local tee times chat. So like, you'll throw out a tee time and you have 40 other people looking at those times and, trying to play with each other and stuff like that. So it's a little more organic now in terms of our gatherings. Sure. And then we'll have like several, quote unquote tournaments a year.
Yeah. I love it. It sounds great. There's so many. I want to have more conversations with some of these different groups that are all around the region. But I also find it interesting that one of the things I find about especially public golf, whether it be like these kind of groups that are mostly public golfers, not necessarily all public golfers, but there's a lot of these, plus the association stuff. And it all just seems very disconnected to me. We're like,
it is for sure.
And I wish like the entire scene was a little bit more centralized.
I agree with you there for sure, because every September we would have what we call the Capital Cup. So we would have originally it was the Hive versus like the core golf WRX people, like the DMV golf WRX people. So it used to be like kind of like us versus them kind of thing. That since merged basically. And so we were trying to find other golf groups to play this Capital Cup, 36 holes on a day and like try to like play for, like a silver cup. But again, it's been hard for us to like find another golf group that one has, I hate to say, but proper handicaps, like people who know the rules, people who, all the stuff that you kind of see at those silly tournaments. And so it's hard for us to find a group of people like that who have, 12 people that can kind of play against us. So that also sadly has kind of gone away in recent years, because we just can't find another group.
What I had was going, as you're saying that, I was like, man, I feel like I could broker that in some way. Like the Beltway Golfers, there's so many, cool. Just through like my social, because I have so many random people throughout the region that are just following, especially like the Instagram account Beltway Golfer, and interact with that account. And their only kind of connective tissue is they're into golf and they're in this region. And so a lot of them represent different groups, but we'll have to noodle that.
right. You got to get your own like team kind of format, and take a little percentage of the entry fee.
I'll noodle that some more, but that's an interesting concept. All right. Well, at some point we've talked about it before, but I'll have to get out and to go a Hive event in person.
Absolutely.
But before I let you go here, the Masters just ended. That means golf season is officially underway. Maybe it's a Hive event, but what's big on your calendar, golf related in 2024?
So I kind of like this is going to be an interesting year, because I kind of like spoiled myself early. And so I need to start saving again, talking about that teacher salary. I need to start saving again. So I did my two big things already. So I played in a fried egg event at Charleston Municipal over spring break. Nice. Actually, it just happened to be over spring break. So that worked out pretty nicely, but that's like Golfers Journal, Fried Egg, all those companies that hold events, they're really expensive, right? So like playing Charleston Municipal for 36 holes is great, but paying that much money is not ideal for someone like me. I mean, there are guys like obviously flying in from all over the country who can drop that kind of money with no problem. That's fine. But I can't do that. Right. I got to play another fried egg event last year because a buddy of mine was just like, do you want to play with me in this event? And I'll pay for your entry fee. And I was like, as long as I can pay for like hotel and drive and all that other stuff, like I did it. But like, it's just out of the realm of being able to afford these things. And as much as I spent at the Masters Pro Shop, you know, like I need to start saving again. So on the docket for this year is going to be, I think I signed up for about 7 or 8 VSJ events. So
Oh, wow.
That'll happen over the summer. Yeah. Usually, I mean, you know, when I haven't done these other big events, usually I'll play about 10 to 12 every year. But like this year, it's going to be probably around 7 or 8. So I'll have that. A friend of mine has, you know, his dad's house is out in Seattle. They're going on a mini golf trip slash have like a tournament that they play every year. So they're bringing me in for that. So that'll be another trip over the summer. But other than that, there's not much going on. It's weird.
You pair all that with 89 rounds at Worthington Manor and yeah, you're in good shape.
Right. I'm not crying over my ability to play a ton of golf. Again, I want to thank my wife as much as I possibly can. But it's just, it's not as spread out as it usually is, I guess. I don't even think I'm going to do any of the VSGA or MSGA qualifiers this year. None of the qualifier sites slash, like none of those kind of like, none of the qualifier sites slash tournament sites and dates, you know, kind of piqued my interest. So sometimes I do that kind of stuff, but I try to, at this point in my career, I kind of tend to shy away from those because they're like super serious, super like, you know, like, I don't know. I just like having fun more than, you know, playing like super competitively at this point.
Yeah. I think that's where a lot of the trend is going and amen to that. But it's interesting as you're talking, certainly about the Fried Egg and Golfers Journal events, which I've also played in. I think I've only played in one of each and they're great. The Fried Egg one I played at Yale. I think they call it the Dog Bowl, which is a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah, and the Golfers Journal one was a few years ago. They visited Schoolhouse 9, and I went to that. But it's a challenge. I'm certainly a fan of both those. I listen to Shotgun Start. I listen to the Fried Egg. I'm a fan of Andy and everything he's doing. I've been a subscriber since day one, first issue of Golfers Journal. Still am. You know, had Casey on the Beltway Golfer podcast. But both of those, I will say, and those are both great events that balance competition and fun and kind of camaraderie of this kind of, I don't want to call it internet golf community, but kind of what it is. But like so many things in the sport, they quickly kind of get expensive. And you, at least the Fried Egg one, to your point, I got there and quickly realized like, oh, everybody here like got on a plane to be here. And like the people right. that will hop on a plane it's not a big deal to fly across the country to play this event.
Right.
I was like,
right. Just right.
Maybe a little bit of a different crowd.
Yeah. When you start having the conversations about like what else they do in terms of golf, like you kind of quickly realize you're not talking about the same thing. Let's just say I've had many of those conversations, on golf courses where like I'm someone's guest at a country club and like another member's there and is talking to me about things. And I'm just like, yeah, I can't afford to join this club because 90K is more than I make in a year, you know, like that kind of thing. I've had that conversation once, which was really, really funny, but yeah, like it's just, they're just so expensive. Like Golfers Journal had an event at Jeffersonville in Philadelphia, and
right.
you know that was $350, which is at that time the most I had ever paid for any kind of entry fee for any kind of tournament, and it was it just adds up very quickly. I know their two man was at Sleepy Hollow, and it was over $1,000 for 18 holes of golf, and there's just zero chance I could ever do that or ever justify that.
I think 350 is kind of cheap for what a lot of them are now.
Right. Exactly. That was years ago. Now it's even more. They're doing like, I think the same event and now it's even more. And I'm just like, there's just no way I could ever do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's part of why I wanted you to share your Worthington Manor deal. Cause I not only I love the fact of just hearing about those kind of deals, but I love the fact that you jumped on it and are taking advantage of it for seven years in. It's fantastic.
Exactly. Taking every advantage possible. That's why I'm, you know, trying to befriend and do my part to try to keep that course as good a shape as can be with what I can do. But I'm hoping they can help extend me, you know, but we'll see what happens when my time runs out.
Love it. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. Let's get on the course here soon, but appreciate you hopping on the podcast, man.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.